Today's program was brought to you by Mood Magazine, a new international quarterly publication about music and food. For more information, visit moodmusicfood.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Episode 90 of The Morning After. We're getting old. I'm Jesse Kiefer.
I'm Sarah Kamen.
I'm really excited about the show today. Sari and I have been slightly up in arms, and as much of the food industry has, about the Time magazine article, The Gods of Food, and the somehow strange omission of any female chefs from that article. So I've called together today a badass group of women in the restaurant industry. I want to call it the Lilith Fair of Food.
No, that's what I wanted to call it.
Okay, and until I find a more Riot Girl name for it, other people have shouted out Clam Bake.
Hashtag
Clam Bake. So hopefully by the end of this Lilith Fair of Food, we will have a name that we've all agreed upon. But I really hope that we can discuss, you know, exactly... kind of what everyone's reaction to the article was. And I do want to say that I fully respect Howard Chu Iwan, who is the editor of the article. He is a friend of the show. He is also one of the best regulars in some of the best restaurants in New York City. And I also do want to say that I'm very proud that I've had him on the show. I'm also very proud that I had Miss Amanda Cohen on the show, who had such a fantastic response to Howard's response on Eater. Claws drawn, glorious, blunt. It was perfection. So first I'll start by introducing everybody who's in studio today. Just directly across from me, Kiara Clayman. She is a line cook at Rouge Tomat. Say hello, Kiara.
Hello, Kiara. No, hi, everyone.
Next to her is Amanda Smeltz. She's the wine director for Roberta's.
Hi, friends.
Next to her, Liza Queen. She's the owner and chef of Pot Liquor.
Hi.
Hey, welcome to the show. Next to her, Nicole Ponseca, co-owner of Jeepney and Maharlika.
Mobuhay.
Next to her, Elizabeth Chubbuck, associate director for wholesale at Murray's Cheese.
Say cheese.
And last but not least, Ashley Merriman, executive chef of the Waverly Inn.
Hello, friends.
Welcome to the show, everyone. I'm totally honored to have you all here. Let's get down to business. First question on the board for this round table or square table, whatever you want to call it, discussion, is what was your initial reaction to the article? And did anyone not question it? Anybody want to? I'll start with Amanda.
Well, I have to say that I have sort of a biased reaction toward it in an unusual direction, because a good buddy of mine is the one who penned and who's the author of the family tree chart, and he's an excellent employee at Roberta's and one of the most thoughtful people on food and gender and culture that I know. So I, of course, was less inclined to react to it intensely than I maybe might have had I not known that it was him penning it. And I did kind of ask him, you know, what he was making of the, you know, of the outcry about it. And I was like, listen, I think the chart's terrific. It's super fun. It's filled with, like, really exquisite detail on different, like, menu items that are happening. I also find it particularly interesting because of the sort of emphasis on international pollination that's in it, which is rad. So, right, it's not, like, globally centered in any one spot. And he was like, listen, wanted Alice Waters to be one of the pillars. He's like, and that's the first restaurant he'd ever worked at is Chez Panisse. So it was a question of, like, how are we editing this thing as opposed to, you know, sort of going with your initial impulse, which is to call Alice Waters one of the most influential people in food ever. So I didn't have that tempestuous a reaction to it until I saw the rest of the spread, which... I was sort of shocked to find that I understood it in the chart, but I was shocked to find in the rest of the issue that they didn't include any women. That's when I started to be like, okay, what's going on here? Like, what editorial decisions were made that excluded those sorts of
female chefs,
right? Yeah. And not just chefs, right? But like, because it's not just people who are influential in food that are chefs by any means. It was just, it was devoid of and entrepreneurs and thinkers and business owners and that kind of thing altogether. So I don't know. Does that answer the question?
Absolutely. Thank you for your feedback. There were three women who were named in the Gods of Food.
Okay, yeah. It was like four out of them or something? Yeah, three or four?
I think it was three. So that was definitely, you know, they were named, but none of them were chefs. And and I mean, to me, the major omission was in this chart of chefs and the lineage and you know, where there have to have been women coming from one of those branches of that family tree. Liza, your response initially to the article as a chef and restaurant owner.
I it's pretty unsurprising. It's been, for me, it's actually more exciting to see a lot of people being very angry about it. But I I was more interested actually in I can't pronounce his name, but the editor's response on Eater, where he kind of explicates what the guidelines were for why people were chosen, and he talks about, you know, reputation and influence and geographical spread and, you know, having a hot restaurant or whatever. But for me, I think Alice Waters is kind of like the perfect example of it, where it's like, well, Roberta's wouldn't even exist without this lady. I mean, if we're going to say that, you know, the Brooklyn dining scene is kind of become sort of like, you know, one of the leading paradigms of how people dine, which is essentially that the food is really good, but the ambiance is sort of casual, and that everything is sourced really carefully, blah, blah, blah. Then, and if that is kind of one of the leading things that's happening in food right now, and you're going to exclude Alice Waters, then I get confused. So it's funny to me that someone from Roberta's would have done the family tree, because you kind of are like, you would not exist had it not been for this lady. I mean, it seems dumb just to focus on this one person. Mm-hmm. Because for me, like, you hear his guidelines, and my reaction was mostly like, of course there was a woman or many women that would have fit those guidelines. Mm-hmm. So, you know, but I also think if you're in this industry, you're like, well, yeah, of course. And it's Time Magazine, so not exactly super cutting edge. So, you know, just kind of like laughter and resigned and, you know, but it is nice to see people being angry about it. But, you know, again, and also his assertion that they only have an obligation to talk about what people are already talking about when you're like, it's postmodernism happened a long time ago. We know there is no such thing as that you're as much responsible for what people are talking about as, you know, you are not this objective little mirror. Mm-hmm. So it's just this kind of like endless repetition of like, you know, the less that women are talked about, the less women are talked about. But for me, I think the part that makes me the most, whatever, angry or tired is just that it filters down in really practical ways, because for us, if you're going to say that women are not influential in the kitchen, we just are less likely to get talked about and hired, you know, which is, for me, is just a tiring subject, frankly.
No, absolutely. Come on, man.
Okay.
Another part kind of going off of what Liza was just saying, in Howard Chua Iwan's response on Eater, he said that we didn't want to feel like we were filling a quota with women. What's your response to that?
No one has ever accused me of being a wallflower or quiet or unopinionated, but I'm a little bit uneasy in the room because I wonder if I have I might be the lone ranger in my opinion of the article. Howard, fellow Filipino, I'm glad he's out there and I'm glad he's writing for Time. I know how editorial calendars work, and they don't happen overnight. And I do believe Time put their homework behind their research and why they would choose the people that they did. I think if we were to focus on the quality, Alice Waters would be a no-brainer. But I think this was a combination of quantitative and qualitative influence. And his response with which God begat who. Mm-hmm. Okay, so if Alice has such a loyal kitchen, and I get that, and perhaps because she's a fucking amazing female entrepreneur, she retains employees, that people don't bounce, that they actually stay with her. So how could the influence spread if they're staying in her kitchen? Now, but the quality of what she does has certainly influenced Roberta's from Seattle to San Francisco and perhaps even my home country, the Philippines. They would not know farm to table. That's how they eat anyway, but they understand it now. What I'm trying to say is, am I pissed that I don't see another a woman that reflects my face and my values in the magazine? Absolutely. But if I look at what's real and how long women have been making inroads into careers, it hasn't really been that long. Of 30, 40, it's not in the grand scheme of timeline. So I get it. I get what Howard says. I might be the only person, but I'm not. It's not that I'm complacent about it. I work hard. 12 years in the industry, I started off as a dishwasher. And I don't think that being a female pervades my opinions. I work hard. I see numbers. I get shit done. When I think about being a woman is my sexuality, and unfortunately when it's that time of the month. That's it. But and I hope that more people are ambitious and hardworking that reflect being a female, and we'll change the list next year or the year after.
And no, thank you for that, Nicole. Thank you for that. Ashley, your response.
Am I correct in saying that Dan Barber was named one of the 10
yes,
best
exactly.
So Dan Barber worked for Alice Waters. Yep. Like, the guy who works for Alice Waters is named one of the gods of food. And for me, that's like, I don't know, that's my saying in the kitchen for that is like, well, that's just a real kick in the dick. And that, you know, it's like the guy, you know, for someone to be named one of the gods of food who came from what I see as one of the more glaring omissions in the chart. It's, you know, my reaction to that is like, it's like you actually had to go out of your way. It's almost like you had to work at getting this done. But much like Chef said, it's sort of like, well, yeah, that's what happens. You know, that's, I don't know.
Elizabeth has something to say.
Yeah, please. I mean, I was going to say, what everyone's talking about what was put on paper, what they actually printed, what we've all read and seen. But I think what might be even a more interesting and sort of revelatory exercise would be if time exposed to us all of the thoughts and discussions that went into how they decided who to choose.
What women didn't get on there.
And why were they excluded? What was the decision process behind it? How did they make those decisions? I think I was reading a lot of responses and back and forth, and one of the things they mentioned about was that in choosing chefs for the tree, they chose people whose lineages looked good on paper. And I don't mean necessarily because the names looked good, but because you could actually draw
a graphic
tree with the names and make it look visually appealing. And they said that Alice's tree, as I was also mentioned before, was narrow because she retained so many of her employees. But again, to go back to that point, Dan Barber, friend and very respected colleague, so much admiration for the man, but that he worked for her and that he came from her and he would be named before she would is, to me, it's like somebody's got to fess up about that.
Yeah, so I want to know, I mean, maybe you can keep going on that point. And from Ashley, what you were saying, how did this happen? How did the omission, I mean, it's so glaring. There must have been some anticipation that there would be a reaction from the female, I mean, not just the female, but from the chef community or the food community. How could that possibly happen that there's a list of women and then Alice didn't get, or whoever, you know?
I mean, if I might offer the sort of along these lines, right? These people are not attempting to be like food historians, nor are they cultural harbingers, right? They're attempting to put together a magazine piece for a magazine that is attempting to be more culturally relevant, picked up by more people and looked at by more people, because Time is a suffering brand, right? Like, that's just, we all kind of know that. So what do? You look for the flashiest possible family tree. You look for the sexiest possible cover, which is astonishing that we didn't find a way to, you know, put Padma Lakshmi on the cover or something, because she's working that angle so hard. You know, to just, it's like, it's flash, it's glare, right? They weren't looking for content. They were looking for something that illustrates well, and they were looking for something that grabs attention well, and that was also palatable to an incredibly wide audience. No one wants to think about the intellectual course of food history, right? Like, this isn't about, like, agricultural revolution, which is actually happening in our country in restaurants and stores and farms and stuff and fucking kitchens. It's just sort of like, how do you make the prettiest looking article you can make? I actually think that's probably what happened in the editorial process. And it's a pity that the hard work of women, you know, wasn't seen as a little bit more flashy or glitzy, right? Like, yeah. Partly what I think went on.
Yeah.
Well, isn't that sort of like part of the problem to why women aren't, or more women aren't more recognized more often, mm-hmm. is that a lot of the work that we do is considered, it's like
mundane.
Too rustic or mundane. Or it's like that, you know, it's like a question, it's a historical question across all fields. It's like, what's the difference between craft and art? You know, women are making craft, men are making art. And it's a question across all fields, but... it's like, it's, a, you know, obviously Time Magazine, it's a magazine. It's trying to sell magazine. Mm-hmm. It's trying to sell. It's trying to make money. And unfortunately,
you're right. It reinforces a paradigm that we would hope would shift, which is that throwing a woman in your magazine for this kind of thing makes it just as appealing.
Kiara.
Yeah. I just say, like, one of the comments that was made is they didn't want the article to be New York centric. And I think that it kind of ended up being a little bit that way. And I worked in Boston for a hot minute, and I just found the atmosphere really different than the New York restaurant scene. And you know, maybe it doesn't have that global influence, but I think you could have done a really interesting tree. I mean, Barbara Lynch is mentioned a lot in the responses, but you also have Lydia Shire, you also have Jody Adams. These are really fantastic chefs. I mean, I worked for Jody Adams, and she's incredible. And really, you know, she won a James Beard Award basically for pioneering using, like, local ingredients, but incorporating really rustic Italian flavors. And, you know, Rialto is not, like, a rustic restaurant. It's fine dining, definitely. And I think a lot of people were influenced by that. You know, how can we incorporate global flavors, you know, with local ingredients? I think a lot of people are doing that.
I mean, that's kind of what Alice Waters...
No, exactly.
It's more of an argument to have brought her into the discussion coming from California.
Right. You know, in California, it's kind of easy, beautiful produce year-round. Like, how do you do it in New England? And I think, you know, if they had looked in that area, that's, you know, it doesn't have the glitz and glamour of New York, but there are some really awesome female chefs in New England that are doing very cool things. And I think, unfortunately, it did end up being a little bit New York centric because everything hot and flashy and glitzy is happening in New York. And, you know, I think an opportunity was missed. And again, you know, you're right, Time Magazine, they're trying to sell magazines, so they have to go with name recognition. But wouldn't it have been really cool if they had exposed people to something new? Yes, have those people on the cover. Yes, have that name recognition, but then also in the content of the article say, well, you know, there's this chef who you might not have heard of, who's doing something really great. And then it would draw people in and teach them about the food industry, you know, rather than make them insiders, rather than just say, okay, this is what's going on already.
So we're all talking about representation of women. To me, it's in the media. It's not in Time Magazine. It's, you know, on television. Are women being correctly represented? Is media reflecting the reality that there aren't women in kitchens, that they aren't, you know, on the up and up, or does the media create this reality?
I think there are females out there in the media that are showing in the restaurant industry and food industry. Gail Simmons, Rachel Ray, Martha Stewart. I mean, those people can't be denied. I think there's like two conversations here going, like, Time Magazine's going out, they don't really mean anything, they're trying to sell articles. The other argument is that they're going for glitz, but I feel like we're all in this room because Time Magazine put something out there. If we didn't care about Time, if they weren't actually selling magazines, if they didn't have a name, none of us would be in here on a Sunday, which is probably all of our days off in the restaurant industry, number one. And if they were going for glitz, I think they would probably put a naked picture a la Demi Moore painted with sushi and food and saying, who are the gods of food? So I can't speak for them. I don't know if they were going for glitz. Obviously, they do have a demographic they want to sell to. I also don't look at Time Magazine as a barometer for me. They don't speak to me. It's not my. I'm not their demo, and I don't need their approval to say that we here in this room are making a difference.
Well,
but that's
not asking for it,
right? But I mean, but who would be? So who is the appropriate voice of food today that should be saying who is the god of food? Who is the authority that would really matter? I don't know. If Time isn't it, then why the hell are we in this room? I don't know.
Liza, you have something to say to that?
Well, I'm hoping that David Chang's going to feel a little guilty and there'll be something about this in Lucky Peach, one would think.
Great, yeah.
I mean, one would hope. But I do think it's two different conversations. I don't think anybody... I mean, like, whatever. Time Magazine, like, truly. But
the article is the reason we're here.
No, I understand. But, I mean, yeah. It's only been interesting to me in that, like, now we're talking about this. Exactly. So great. But
and
I
Jesse
think...
Jesse made the point that Howard... Magazine. Has never worked in a restaurant.
It's, it's a general interest magazine.
That's
it's not a food industry magazine.
Yeah. I mean, I think the more interesting point is, like, how... what is the gauge for these lists? I think that Chef has a more interesting point for me, where you know, women making craft versus men making art. Mm-hmm. Is, I think, for me, the way I think about it, more the crux and issue with all this list making and the kind or lack of attention that maybe women chefs get or don't get is, I think, you know, based on this differentiation and this problem. Like, you know, if you had made an entirely different kind of list, then, like, where are all my ladies of the 70s that wrote all those cookbooks that we were all so influenced by? Mm-hmm. Like, where are my River Cafe ladies? Mm-hmm. You know, like, that is, for me, a more interesting conversation where, you know, there's, like, these parallel universes of how cooks have come up, and there's this kind of fine dining one, which, you know, there are many women involved in there, but, you know, really it's going to be dominated by men. You're right. Like, it is, we have been slowly working our way in. But meanwhile, in this parallel timeline, there are people who have been writing these cookbooks since the 60s and 70s, people like Diana Kennedy and blah, blah, you know, who we are, Elizabeth David. I mean, I can do a huge list. But the fact that their lineage and their influence on basically what everybody that I know is doing is not more widely discussed. That is a more interesting topic of conversation for me, anyway.
Yeah. I want to get back to this point that Jesse made about, you know, is it art that creates reality or art repeats, imitates reality or the other way around? And just on more of like a general topic of media, Jesse and I were talking earlier about how actually a lot of the cooking shows that probably, you know, get the largest audience of people tuning in to like think about the food industry have sort of stepped up and have really kind of changed their ways in the last couple of years. Like all these shows that were thought of as, you know, boys clubs like Iron Chef. Well, now Iron Chef has two female chefs on it. And, you know, no, I think they're really trying to be more inclusive. And is that reflective of the reality of the state of women chefs or women in the food industry? Or, you know, is the industry a little bit like a step behind and needs to kind of catch up with the way that women are portrayed in media? Maybe Ashley, you can speak to this.
Having been on Iron Chef, my chef, my mentor, Alex Cornicelli, like if I think about my tree, right? Like if I were on that list, which like obviously I'm not a god of food, like that's not, I'm, you know, but if I were on that list, like I came from Maria Hines, who is a chef in Seattle and was at some point or another, the restaurant that I was a sous chef at was named one of the 10 most important restaurants in the country by the New York Times. So I came from her. She used to work at 11 Madison Park. I also came from Alex Guarnaschelli, who is now an Iron Chef, but she worked for Danielle for 7 years. And before that, she worked at fucking Guy Savoy in Paris. Like a woman from New York was working at Guy Savoy and running one of his kitchens. And so, you know, that's like, that's a serious lineage and it actually means something, but it means something less. Like I having experienced, just as an example, Alexandra Guarnaschelli for almost a decade working for her, you watch her career and like, I've learned so much from her, but I will say that I think that if, you know, the roles were reversed, like a man with that resume who ran Guy Savoy in Paris and then worked for Danielle for 7 years, I think would get a little bit more respect. And I think that most women in the industry can say that, and I think that it's fine. And we all sort of shake our heads and is like, well, that's fine. That's how it is. But, you know, at a certain point, it's just kind of like, it's maddening and it's frustrating. All that being said, I think that, I mean, sort of going off topic a little bit, but Well, that's all I'll say about that for now.
I think that's a good point to kind of take a break, to kind of, Nicole, you have one more thing to say?
Oh, I just wonder, too, how much women in the restaurant industry, do they seek the attention, or are they savvy enough to deal with media?
Mm-hmm.
It's a bit of a game, you know, knowing the right people, playing into PR, understanding your product, which I think they tout David Chang as being a very sharp entrepreneur. I want that. I understand entrepreneurship. Mm-hmm. But I wonder, are there enough women in that role?
Well, I guess the other question is, if the media is pursuing men primarily for write-ups and coverage, how much time do you ladies have to get out of the kitchen and pursue media attention? If the media isn't coming to you, there's no time in your day. It's not your priority. Your priority is to make that menu, to get the ingredients in there, make the menu shine, keep your restaurant running, keep the numbers coming in. I mean, it's not like you're going to just walk out of the kitchen on an afternoon and say, hey, let's go track down some journalists to make sure they're paying attention to what I'm doing.
I don't do that either, but I am 360 in my business, like, mm-hmm. and I get PR and I get specials and I understand my niche. So I'm just saying, do we understand that it is an industry, a relationship between the quality of the food that you're doing and media? It's marketing. I also have it's marketing background. Like,
wait, so you're saying that like women aren't covered because we don't know how to court PR?
No, I'm not saying that you don't know how.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm saying, are there enough women courting it? It's not a matter of understanding or desire. I'm saying, are there enough women in the old boys network making roads into that? Does that, making relationships? It's not, it doesn't happen. You don't open a restaurant and then say, oh, I want a press. Like, are you courting it? You know what I mean? I hope that makes sense, because I don't want to say that women shouldn't be in that role. I'm not saying women don't desire it, but are there enough women like that? Wolfgang Puck was doing that 30 years ago. Right.
I mean,
I think the other side of it, though, and this was definitely mentioned many times in all of the backlash on different newspapers and blogs, is that the media does tend to court male chefs in a way that they don't pay attention to the female chefs. And what I said earlier, and I'm not sure if it was clear, but unless the media is courting you, there's not a lot of time in your day to go out there and put wheels behind a marketing engine. So, and that's, you know...
Yeah.
And that's what needs to change. And maybe that is the best result that can come from all the controversy around this article, is that people are starting to pay attention and make connections, and maybe the media picks their head up and they say, hey, let's pay attention to what these women are doing, because it's really important.
So I want to thank you guys so much. I want to take a break now. Hopefully we'll come back. We'll kind of come to a resolution, maybe how do women become a better represented in the media? How are they able to better market themselves? And also maybe just talk about like real life in the kitchen situations that will hopefully show that, you know, there isn't a boys club. Taking a break here on The Morning After.
You are listening to Maurice Narcisse by Eula on the heritageradionetwork.org.
Yeah.
What's Mood? Mood is a quarterly magazine about music and food. For its creators, not many things can beat a good record and a delicious meal. Maybe a well-written story or a gorgeous photo. Well, that's all in Mood. The magazine looks at music and food in a cohesive and unique way, with a keen eye to design and high-quality writing. Its contributors are located around the globe, and the stories span accordingly. Check it out today at moodmusicfood.com. That's moodmusicfood.com.
And we're back here on the morning after. We are having a roundtable panel of women in the restaurant industry in reaction to Time's Gods of Food article. Just to quickly go through the roster, Kiara Clayman from Line Cook at Rouge Chamotte, Amanda Smeltz, beverage director, wine director at Roberta's, Liza Queen, chef and owner of Potliquor, Nicole Ponseca, co-owner of Maharlika and Jeepney, Elizabeth Chubbuck, associate director of wholesale for Murray's Cheese, and Ashley Merriman, executive chef at the Waverly Inn. We've had a great discussion so far, and I kind of want to get back to the roots, back to the restaurant, like, you know, the culture of the restaurants that we have worked in. Are women treated the same as men and given the same opportunities for advancement? I'll direct this to maybe Kiara, line cook, Rouge Chamotte.
One of the things that I first noticed when I started working at Rouge was just the diversity of the kitchen. That was something that really struck me because it was the first time that I wasn't in a boys' club. I used to work at a restaurant called Northeast Kingdom. There was one other female cook there, and it was only a line of four, so that was pretty good. But before that, I was pretty much working in boys' club places. I was the only female cook there, it's sort of odd, and I was thinking about this because I kind of got into the industry. Like, I have a lot of male friends. I always have, and I kind of like that environment. Like, I'm seen as, you know, okay, we can have some locker room talk, and I'm one of the guys, and it's cool. But, you know, Rouge Chamotte, I think it's very different. I mean, it's fine dining. It's the first time I've been in a Michelin star kitchen. And I think that you get just ambitious people who are good at what they do. I mean, people come from all over the world. Right now, the two turn-ons are women. Those, for people listening who may not know, turn-ons are the people who can work every single station in the kitchen. So they're ostensibly the best cooks. There was one female sous chef when I started, and she's moved on, but... half the hotline right now are women, and they're really great cooks, but, just people coming from all over who want that experience. So it's been kind of cool, and it has been, just for me, like, a mental adjustment of, like, oh, like, I'm not the only woman here, like, you know, and it just comes down to, like, practical things of, like, I have cramps, I can actually, like, tell someone about it and be like, hey, do you have Advil? Like, you know? And not feel like maybe I'm, like, grossing them out or something like that, you know? So it's been cool, and I think, like, it does impact the kitchen a little bit. I think a lot of chefs, you know, they hire who they want to hang out with and who they want to work with. And there has to be, like, personalities have to click because you're with these people 50, 60 hours a week. So I think part of the boys club thing is, like, if you're a male chef, like, you want to hire the people that you want to spend 50, 60 hours a week with. But it's different, Rouge, and the chef Jeremy Bierman and the chef de cuisine, Andy Bennett, like, they do treat everyone the same, and that's something that's very cool. It's like, you know, if you can work this station and you can cook your ass off, like, it doesn't matter who you are, where you come from. I mean, there's people from all over the world working at Rouge right now. So it is very, like, a very even playing field, and women do get promoted there, and it's been very cool to see.
So let me direct the same question to Liza or Ashley. You know, the kitchens that you've worked in, have you experienced inequality because of your sex?
I've always found kitchens to be, like, pretty actually welcoming, radical places, and that's kind of how I try to run my kitchen now. Like, I honestly, you know, as the chef now, like, I really don't give a fuck, like, where you're from or who you are or what color your hair is, or I mostly just care if you have the scallops for table 21 or not. Like, I really don't care. But, you know, I think that there's this, which I think many, many of us in this industry can say the same thing. Like, I think that the restaurant, I mean, I've been in it since I was 13, and I don't know how to do anything else. It's the only paycheck I've ever gotten. It's the only thing I know how to do. It's the only paycheck I ever want to get. But there is this sort of strange thing where what goes on in the restaurants is, like, otherwise pretty nice or totally fine. But what's happening and what we're seeing with this article is what's happening outside of the restaurant, and how is it somehow not reflecting back to us what is happening inside of the restaurant?
Absolutely.
So there's this, like, question of, like, you know, you read, you know, I read that, you know, the response on Eater, and then you read the responses to the response, which is always so terrifying. But, you know, there's this, like, sort of thing of, like, just put your head down and work hard, and it's going to work out. Just people who work the hardest rise to the top. And, you know, I have to say, like, as I think that idea is totally fucking absurd, because in this country, if you look at the people who've worked, like, the hardest ever, doing the hardest jobs ever, like, in other words, African Americans, like, they aren't the most successful people on earth, right? Like, historically, in this country, like, they've done the hardest work of any group of people in the entire universe in this country, except, but they aren't the most, like, widely recognized and successful humans as a group on the planet, right? Like, this idea that working hard is somehow going to get you to the top just all on its own hard work is not true. I'm off on a little tangent, but the real point is, like, how is it that the media is not reflecting back to us what is actually going on in kitchens, which is actually, like, I found to be a pretty lovely place and the only thing I ever want to do and the only thing I ever did want to do.
Do you think that's because the author has never worked in a kitchen?
I don't know if he has worked in, I mean, I don't know if he's worked in a kitchen or not. I can assume from his article that he hasn't, because I mean,
like him more.
Yeah. I'd probably like him more, but no, I don't know. I don't know why that is. And I think it's, you know, it's that the question that we were talking about earlier, which is, like, what do women do? What is women's work? How is it valued? How is it perceived differently than men's work? And I think, you know, this other thing has come up in this topic this week is, like, how is it just about cooks and chefs not getting recognized in the way that, say, sommeliers have, like, a little bit more gender parity, even just in New York? Like, I think that there's way more gender parity outside of chefs and kitchens in the food industry than there is just, like, in kitchens.
And that's a great segue to something I definitely wanted to touch upon. I mean, I work in wine. Amanda works in wine. Elizabeth works in cheese. Are our fields more gender specific? Why are women more prominent in the cheese world, or in, you know, in the pastry world, or in the wine world?
It's a difficult question to answer. For cheese and cheese making as an industry, throughout history, women have always been the cheese makers. That was the role of the women on farms when men were out doing different work. The women were milking the animals and transforming a very quickly spoiling natural product into cheese and butter and things that had a longer shelf life. And I do think that that history, those roots, have sort of allowed or created an industry now in which there are plenty of women who are very successful and very influential. And I think that it's probably fairly evenly spread in terms of men and male and female. But I don't know how to answer. I'm not sure I know how to answer the question.
No, that's fair. Amanda, what are your thoughts?
I certainly can't. I'm not enough of a historian to give the origins of why there's different spreads of genders across the different aspects of, like, the food and wine and restaurant industry. But what I can say is I read a really intelligent little piece by Levi Dalton, who's in wine in New York, and I just love this dude. He's so thoughtful. And he wrote about Eric Asimov, who's the New York Times wine writer. And I fucking love this guy. I really do. Here's why. He runs this column called Wines of the Times, and he does it, I believe it's bi-monthly or so, where he puts together a panel for blind tasting of wine that seems to be from a spot or like of a type that's trending.
Yeah, or it's like Riesling or right, Sicily.
Right, something that's like come up that seems to be interesting. He puts together a panel. It's him, Florence Fabricant, who's also employed at the Times, and one or two other people in the industry, and he's been doing it since 2003, so a long time running. There are and have been so many female guests on that tasting panel, and they repeat, too. So it's not just once and done. It's not filling a quota. And when Asimov was contacted to be asked about this, like, is this something you conscientiously do? He was just like, no, it's just that women are really successful in wine in New York. But what Dalton says about that is that Asimov seeming like, oh, I just do that naturally, it's not natural. It's representative of somebody who is more progressive and who is more open-minded because they're willing to use their podium at the Times as a place of advocacy. Now, whether or not Asimov thinks that's what he's doing, he's totally doing it because those women get the implicit approval of the Times. Their careers get a boost. You bet your ass I'm going to show the owners of this restaurant that tasting panel when I show up in the Times on it. You know they're going to see it, and I'm not going to ask them for money. But I am going to let them, like, there's a stamp of approval that goes with that stuff. So that question of, like, does art imitate reality or does reality imitate art? You know, there is advocacy that the media can do, and the good people doing it, they do it naturally. They don't even have to think about it. They just do it, and they do reflect back those sorts of things.
I've also heard biologically women are better tasters.
Yeah, there's some controversy around it, but I like to think it's true. You know, and that's coming from an industry where, like, look, land ownership in Europe, where wine has so strongly been the thing, has been predominantly male until, like, a generation ago.
Yeah.
So there are people out there who are doing it through the media and who are using the media as a place where, like, women's names get name-checked and their restaurants get name-checked and their work gets name-checked, and that's good for them. It's good for their careers, you know?
Yeah.
So does Time have a responsibility to do that? Hell no. They can run their magazine however they want, but the media can totally be used for better purposes, and that's what pisses me off about
it. Well, and Time had a really good opportunity and to let it do slip. That. So I guess as this gaggle of ladies, how do we change things? Nicole.
Well, I make a point to just hire very qualified and hardworking people. I have a wonderful team of a very diverse staff, and I promote when necessary. And I'm happy to say in my executive team, it's three girls and one guy. So,
Elizabeth?
I also say we promote each other. We promote each other, and we cannot be afraid to say, hey, media, come look at us. We're here, and we're doing things that are important. You know, if you're not getting the attention that you deserve, it's probably because the people who are looking don't deserve the things you have to offer, or that they need to be called out. They need to be reminded. Somebody needs to put them in check and say take a peek, because we're here and we're making a real stand.
Liza?
Oh, I don't know. Yeah, I don't know.
That's fair.
I mean, you know. Oh, I've got this perfect solution. It's going to fix everything.
No, I mean, but I really do think that my initial reaction to all of this was like, why are we having this conversation again? I feel like I had a really easy time getting this many women in the restaurant industry here.
Yeah.
Why is that not on anybody else's mind?
But again, it was about your viewpoint.
Sure, my viewpoint.
And the quality of the people that you wanted in the room was easy for you to grab us. But if Time Magazine wasn't looking at, like, just numbers and sex appeal, whatever, that was what they were after.
Mm-hmm.
But in this room and listening to everyone here, I think it's so very clear that there's so many women from pastry to front of line executive chef to running the business that are making such strides. But unfortunately, Time Magazine didn't do that, and that was their loss, but our gain to make it different.
No, and I agree. I thank them that this conversation is continuing to happen, and I hope that the next thing that happens this way doesn't happen this way. We don't have to talk about this. We can be like, yeah, duh. There's a lot of women who are making great strides in the industry, and it's not something new.
Well, I think Ashley has a good point. Like, I actually think it's interesting because I think at this point kitchens are really lovely in the way that they're sort of a meritocracy. You can either cut it or you can't, or you're out. It's very immediate kitchens.
And that's across...
which is fantastic.
Male and female.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
I'm like, whatever, it doesn't matter. Like, you can either do the job or you can't. So, and I do think it's interesting because in kitchens, like, that's how it is. You can either do your job or you can't. But from the outside, the perception is very different. You're right. Like, in kitchens, like, men, women, like, whatever. Like, do your station or don't. But I have found that, in general, the eating public is sort of lagging behind that. Their perceptions of, you know, women in the kitchen is very different from the way things are in kitchens now.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I guess that's a step forward, you know, in that, like, the kitchens work based on your value. But I have seen, like, these really glaring examples of the way things are perceived from the outside, you know? Like, I've had a guy come up to me and my Sue on the line, we have an open kitchen, and be like, you know, thanks to the dude next to me, thanks, chef. And literally, there was one time where he was like, no, this is the chef, you know, pointed at me. And, like, the guy, like, couldn't even process it and continued to thank my Sue for the lovely meal. Which I thought was very funny. But but I use this as an example where I'm like, actually, the eating public seems to be lagging behind how we're already doing things in the kitchen.
I totally agree. I mean, I feel like any sort of, like, sexism that I've experienced is from guests. It's not from coworkers. And I do agree that the media needs to portray things differently and people need to start seeing things differently because the reality is actual and not what they're perceiving, what they're imagining. Ashley, you looked like you had something to say.
I don't have anything to say. No, it is true, though. I mean, I have two male sous chefs, and it's interesting to me that, you know, one of them who's worked with me for 8 years, like, he's my best friend. He started with me as an intern. He's been asked to do, you know, these pop-up restaurants, and, you know, he gets courted so much more often than I do, and I'm like, wait a minute. Like, I'm the guy that taught this guy everything. Like, he didn't even know what salt was when he started with me. And it's fine, you know, of course I'm his number one fan and going to champion him, and, you know, until... you know, forever, but it's you know, those people aren't really caught up necessarily, and, you know, I think there is some food media out there also that I think can, you know, there's, you know, people have their biases and they contribute to it just as much, but I've always found kitchens to be, like, the best place to be.
Kiara, yeah, like, you want something to say?
No, I absolutely agree with that. I think, like, and I want to just agree with what Elizabeth was saying, like, you know, I'm definitely, like, I'm here, I'm in New York, I'm working line, like, I, you know, as opposed to everyone else sitting in this room, like, I'm not a chef, I'm not a manager, like, I don't own anything, like, I don't have people working under me, like, I work a station in a fine dining restaurant, like, and I'm trying to get there, and, like, I see lots of other people working around me doing the same thing, and lots of incredibly talented women, and I would just say, like, I know in kitchens everywhere, there's a lot of really talented women who are, you know, learning and growing and eventually are going to get to the point where they want their own place, they want to start their own place, and, like, you know, I just hope that when they do, there are people that recognize the opportunity to invest in their restaurants and that they get that opportunity, because I also see, like, you know, it's a lot easier, you know, a guy comes in and, like, oh, you know, I fit the perception of what you think a chef should be, and so you're going to give me money. And, like, you know, I would just hope that women, like, you know, they take that extra step, you know, open your own place, do it. Like, that's what I want to do. Like, and I'm going to try my ass off to do it, and maybe I'll do it and maybe I'll fail. And I don't know, but, you know, at some point I'll take that risk, and I hope other women do. And, you know, I'm sitting in a room with, you know, people who have done that, and it's really inspiring to me, because it can be done, and you can find the time to, you know, not just do your work, but also, you know, find a space, find investors, and do all that extra stuff, if you want it badly enough. And I just hope that, you know, that happens, and that, you know, the next time that a magazine wants to publish who's influential in food, they'll have, you know, they won't be able to ignore all of these women who are doing such amazing work. Like, it will be too glaringly obvious that, like, you know, even the general public will say, why are you not putting these people on the cover, let alone in the story?
When you were working in a kitchen before Rouge Tomat that was heavily men,
mm-hmm.
did you ever feel any sort of pressure to, you know, like, to really be one of the guys? Because you were talking about that before. Like, did you ever feel like you weren't able to assert your femininity because you were supposed to be, you know, like...
I don't know how feminine, like, you can't see me, but I don't know. But no.
General,
like,
I mean, do you feel like you command more authority when you kind of, you know, like, assume the identity of the other guys around you?
I mean, there are definitely, like, some comments that I have rolled with or, like, let slide, but generally I've had, like, very good working relationships with everybody. And, you know, like everyone said, it just comes down to, like, can you do your job well? And if you can, then you get respect. And if you can't, then you don't, you know? But there definitely have been some instances, I mean, you know, some homophobic comments and things like that. More homophobic than, like, outright sexist. But that's everywhere. I don't think that's exclusive to kitchens. You're just in closer quarters in kitchens.
I guess I want to bring the conversation to a close in this room, but hopefully it will continue elsewhere. Does anybody have any last thoughts, last tidbits they'd like to mention? We've covered it all.
We could talk for days about this.
I know we can. Ashley?
I think, I don't know, the biggest thing that I keep coming back to is like the most amount of, you know, sexism or whatever you want to call it that I've experienced as a chef or as a person who's, you know, I'm a cook and I've been cooking for a long time has actually been from the media. It hasn't been from my colleagues and fellow chefs and people in the, who actually work in the industry. And, it's actually the worst of it has been from the media. And I ultimately can sort of say, well, I can just like raise my middle finger to the media and be like, well, why don't you go fuck yourselves? Because it doesn't ultimately to me matter that much, but unfortunately it affects your bottom line and it affects your business and it affects your ability to succeed. And it affects like young cooks who are coming up and like don't see the kind of role models maybe that I saw because I'm old now and saw like, you know, there were so many women chefs in New York in the 1980s that, you know, there was articles in New York Times about like, who's the next generation of women chefs that are going to take these great, you know, these places. But, you know, the media, I think in the end, I sort of just come back to the idea that I think the media has a responsibility. And unfortunately, Time Magazine, I don't think really lived up to the responsibility. And that's fine. Like, I don't really, like, does anyone even actually read Time Magazine? No.
The general public does.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they lag behind.
Yeah. The general public does, and they lag behind.
And I think the corollary to that is, again, you know, not to just like keep beating the same dead horse, but I really do believe that, you know, it's not like women are different kinds of chefs. It's not like we make different kinds of food. Mm-hmm. But I do think that like our family tree is from a different place, again, because for a long time we were like teachers and writers and like we weren't running commercial kitchens, like, you know, in great numbers. And so when you talk about, well, the media has a responsibility to cover women, I understand how that might grate with somebody from the media. Like, fuck you. Like, why? I don't have a responsibility to do Jack. And whether or not that's the case or not, you know, my point is, again, that it's, for me, it's more about reevaluating what it is that, you know, makes a chef worth talking about or, you know, what our history has been outside of, I guess, you know, fine dining or, you know, where were we cooking and how we were going about things before outside of, I guess, fine dining restaurants, you know? And, I mean, I guess it's mostly that. Like, I think these lists are about, like, what is valued and what types of food is valued and what types of history are valued as much as anything, you know?
Elizabeth?
Why don't we get some of these journalists into the kitchen of these incredibly talented female chefs and let them get bossed around for a day. Let them see how hard these ladies work. It's like, hey, media, catch up to reality.
No, I mean, I know that it, just as someone in the media, it is my responsibility to cover the industry, not women chefs, not male chefs, just the industry. And I hope that... that all publications and other media outlets can kind of come up and recognize that it is an industry. It's not based on sex.
Yeah. I'm really happy to hear after having this conversation that it's the media who's behind. And, you know, I think as long as reality is, it's in the place where women feel comfortable and, you know, they feel like as long as they're working hard and they're doing the best they can, that's what's going to be recognized. I mean, we're in a good place. And it's the media's job to catch up at this point.
We'll do our best, Sari.
I'm so glad we have 2 million listeners, Jesse.
I want to thank everyone for being on the show. Kiara, Amanda, Nicole, Liza, Elizabeth, Ashley, thank you for coming on your days off. I owe you all a beer. It's been a great talk. This is The Morning After on heritageradionetwork.org.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.